From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Parents fret a lot about raising girls and boys in our unfettered mass culture, where the good, bad, and ugly surge past tender, eager, young eyes. Caitlin Flanagan, social critic, writer, and to many feminists, infuriating gadfly, says our daughters are especially vulnerable, and that the old days and old ways had some good things going as far as raising girls. Her new book is Raising Hell in the Blogosphere, and Second Thoughts, too, this hour on Point, American Girls, Adolescence, and a Call to Go Back to a More Protected Girlhood. You can join the conversation. Is Flanagan right, half right, all wrong? Are you worried about how the culture we live in is steering our daughters? What about our sons? And what about free, strong, young women? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Culver City, California, is Caitlin Flanagan, contributing editor at The Atlantic, former staff writer for The New Yorker. Her last book, To Hell With All That, Loving and Loathing Our Inner Housewife, kicked up a little firestorm. Her new book is doing the same. It's called Girl Land. Kirkus Reviews calls it a compelling, convincing case for more parental involvement in girls' lives. In Elle magazine, Kathy Hanauer writes, the book reads like a tisking from a shut-in who watches too much alarmist TV. Caitlin Flanagan, thanks very much for joining us. There's the range.
Yes, well, I'm glad the shut-in was able to make it out to the Culver City studio. Yes. So this is, you know, big day for me. I left the house.
Hope you've got your shades on. The sunlight must be a rare, strange thing to you.
Yes, exactly.
So what's the problem you're taking on here, Caitlin?
Well, I started out not so much with the problem, but with the fascination that this period of what I call girl and adolescence for girls, you know, across time and culture, there are certain things about it that are always constant, that it's always a time when girls want to pull away a little bit. In the early 90s, we thought about a loss of self-esteem, and we looked to maybe the masculine culture and the patriarchy maybe causing it. In other cultures, we see girls withdrawing a bit, wanting to be quieter, wanting to go to their bedrooms, wanting to write in diaries and listen to music and really get in touch with their thoughts and their feelings in a way that spunky, feisty, littler girls don't. And that there seems to be something unique and profound going on during that experience for girls that's different from what goes on for boys. And I was interested in that. And then the second part of it was saying, given that this is true across time and culture, given that it's such an emotionally exquisite experience, an intense experience for girls, what does our current culture look like for them? How does it support them? And in some ways, it clearly does. And how is it run counter to their best interests? And in some ways, it does just as strongly do that.
So girl and adolescence, you're really talking, put some age numbers on it. What are you talking about here broadly?
Well, we always talk about how, you know, entry into adolescence is getting younger and younger in our culture, but I think probably around age 11, girls start really coming into that early adolescence, and then through senior adolescence at, you know, 8, 17, 18, 19 years old, that real period of, you know, classic adolescence as been defined for throughout the 20th mm-hmm. century anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, that from early middle school through the late teen years.
So give us a couple of depictions then. From your perspective, Caitlin, what was it when it was better, when it was good, perhaps you'd say, and what is it now in the experiencing, the living of it?
Well, this is the paradox. You know, I taught girls for a long time. I was a high school teacher. There are things going on for girls now that, you know, I'm 50, we couldn't have dreamed of. This absolute sense that math and science needs to be accessible to girls, that equal athletic opportunities are available to them, that the professional schools, some of them women now outnumber men, that when a girl says she wants to be a doctor, nobody even says to her, well, what a good thing for you to even, you know, dream of. Good luck to you. We go, oh, that's a good idea. Here's some advice. So all that is worlds better. And I don't know if we can ever bring back all of the protective mechanisms we had before because they were so intertwined with the way girls were kind of held back. But what I see as a problem is, you know, if you had told feminists of the 70s, the women who made so much of this possible today, oh, yeah, it's going to be great when we get to the aughts for girls, because they're going to have math, they're going to have science, and we're just going to steep them in pornography. They're going to have access to it 24/7. The boys, they have their first sexual experiences and encounters with them physical. They'll be steeped in pornography. Everybody will think that that's a great thing for them to have, and they'll have access to it in their rooms all the time. Feminists would have screamed and said, what in the world are you talking about? And if we had described to them the sexting culture of young middle school and the hookup culture of later high school and certainly of college, and that girls were going to be exposed to sex that was free of affection, free of any kind of emotional commitment, sometimes even free of respect, and that that was going to start at a very early age, those women would have been absolutely horrified. And I think parents need to get much more involved thinking about all of the consequences that have come with our modern world and specifically how they affect girls as opposed to boys.
Let me read just a little bit from Caitlin Flanagan's Girl Land. You write, Caitlin, the emotional life of a little girl is drenched with romance. Modern mothers planning to raise independent, strong-minded daughters are very often confronted with a preschool girl's stubborn attraction to princess costumes and stories and toys. A girl entering adolescence is making the discovery that female sexuality, a force more complex than she has ever imagined, is intimately enmeshed with romance. A girl at this stage of her life realizes that dreams of being in love, of having a boyfriend, a husband, a family of her own depend upon sex. The awareness begins with menstruation, something she may have been waiting for eagerly, but that brings with it certain raw truths that emerging female sexuality is intrinsically bound in the blood and profundity that are the truth of human reproduction. The toll and consequence of sexuality fall much more harshly on women than on men. That much, at least, I guess, is since time immemorial. Are girls and boys really facing something new today in the ratio of the weight of what falls on them?
Well, I think that the, one of the reasons, I think the essential reason girls' adolescence is more intense is that confrontation of little girls are drawn to romance. You know, some aren't, but in the large number, they love romantic stories, even in their crudest and simplest element. And of course, they don't have any idea what really adult sexuality is like, and they don't have any way of knowing that there's much more risk and danger and uncertainty in a woman's sexual unfolding than there is in a man's. And adolescence, you know, there's that classic moment in a girl's adolescence, very bittersweet for adults to see, where, you know, she's coming of age and she's dressing in her clothes that are appealing and alluring, and all she's thinking about is attracting the attention of other boys that she knows. And you'll see that man sit up and take notice, and suddenly she's in a world of where sexual threat starts coming in. And that's all a lot of weight for girls to deal with. And I think it's one reason, one of the many reasons, that it's a more profound experience. There's more vulnerability to it. We'd like to say there isn't. It's almost not politically correct to admit that there is. But obviously there is. And, you know, she's being told so many things about her sexuality and risks that fall to her that don't fall to boys. And all of this, I think, adds to the fact that it's an intense time. It's a psychologically mm-hmm. complex time, and it has been throughout the ages. And that what's going on now with our very sex-forward, porn-forward culture that a lot of adults are really afraid to even talk about or explore or encounter in terms of their children, to their children's detriment, is something that we need to open our eyes to and be a lot more forthcoming in talking to one another about it and to our kids about it.
So what would or what did a good girl land experience look like? These years of adolescence you're talking about, in the ideal, to your mind, Caitlin Flanagan, what would or did they look like? What was the texture of them, the reality?
Well, I like the word would as opposed to what they would have, because I think mm-hmm. in the past you had these limits that didn't make it ideal. But what I would like to see is a world today where we have exactly what we have in terms of opportunity, educational, athletic, ultimately professional, but that where they have a lot of protection from this world, where parents are sort of really thinking in a thoughtful way. You know, if you were 13 or 14, we didn't have the internet. If we had, what would we have looked up? You know, I always say, sit down at your computer and just put in some of the words that you would have tried to look up when you were a kid and find out what you immediately discover. We can't protect girls from these forces when they leave the house. Everybody's got a cell phone. Everybody's got a way to look at all this stuff. But if we said to girls, you know, at home, no internet in your bedroom. That's a zone for you. Historically, girls have always been very connected to their rooms during adolescence. They like to withdraw. They like to retreat. They like to write in diaries. They like to reflect on things. Yeah, maybe she can bring her cell phone up for a certain phone call, or she wants to have an iChat. She makes a plan with her parent. But to barricade that space, I think that would be an ideal thing to do for girls.
Barricade the space of the sort of the childhood bedroom where they can
bedroom,
still retreat
that can become,
from...
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I think we could all use a retreat from internet forces. But for girls, the school day is so intense for them. There's so many pressures on them. And what do they look like? And who's sitting with whom? And there's all this drama that's going on for them that if they're connected to the internet as soon as they get home, it never ends.
And it's not just the absence of internet. You want them to be sort of able to still, what, do you say girls fetishize tokens of childhood more than boys do? So what, to still have their, I don't know, teddy bears and canopy
well,
bed?
Well, I don't know. I don't think we have to encourage that. You go into college girls today, you can go into the most sex-positive college girls' dorm room, and she'll have something from her childhood. The men in college don't have that. The young women do. Every young woman will have something in there that she brought from home that's half ironically kept and half quite sentimentally kept that reminds her of being a little girl. So I don't think we have to endorse that at all. But I think we need to take a look at that and say, why do they do that? Why don't boys do that? What are they telling us with that? And I think another thing we can look at is the way that young girls continue in the spite of a culture that's very anti-romance. You know, there's no more dating as we knew it. Girls don't expect to have a boyfriend in high school. But they love stories about dating. They love stories about romance. They love Twilight. They love Taylor Swift. That's telling us something.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about American girls, adolescence, and a call to go back to a more protected, innocent childhood. Caitlin Flanagan makes the call. She drives feminists a little crazy, but she's worried, she says, about our girls. Her new book is Girl Land. Caitlin, you know that you attract a certain kind of pushback here that's really strong, and people say, well, this is a kind of just gussied up, reflexive conservatism. Kate Rofe writes, Flanagan may be more sophisticated than many conservative ideologues, but there's no qualitative difference here from Michelle Bachmann trying to protect what she calls innocent little 12-year-old girls from the HPV vaccine. She says it's just life you're trying to protect girls from here.
Well, there's no doubt that there's two schools of thought about how to raise girls. And there's a lot of women who believe strongly that girls should be completely released into what some people call life, some people call modern culture, where the imperatives of male sexuality, which is not necessarily to always include affection, commitment, love, respect, where things will be done in groups instead of one-on-one, group activities for kids instead of leaning towards boyfriends and girlfriends. I think there are people who really want that for their daughters. And I think there are, people who are very comfortable with their daughters being part of a culture where they're servicing boys and are comfortable with their daughters, even performing oral sex on boys that they don't know very well. There are a lot of moms who are comfortable with that, and I accept that. I'm not trying to change anybody's mind.
But is there necessarily a one-for-one between the parents who want more independence and freedom and oral sex with strange boys? I mean, those don't necessarily follow.
Well, when you describe that the book is saying that girls need to stay at home all the time or that this is a reflexively conservative idea, I'm not saying girls need to stay home. I taught for a long time, and I think girls really do best when they have lots of athletic opportunities and lots of social opportunities, but I think they need supervision. I think they need support. I think this idea that sending girls afield with this hypersexualized message and no support and no supervision and no framework, that's protecting them from life, I would really disagree with that. And I think life for adults is very different than life from growing girls and growing teenagers. I don't think an adult woman needs to be protected from life, but I think growing girls need to be protected from corrosive forces. And I think that there are a lot of people who want to protect their daughters more.
Is there a risk in that understandable urge and desire of also pulling girls away from the freedoms and strengths that they've gained in the decades since the old girl land filtered away on us?
Well, that's the big question, and that's what I think people aren't willing to engage with. I think that's the great question. Can we give girls all of these freedoms and all of this empowerment that we all worked to gain for them? And can we simultaneously protect them from these corrosive, crass, sexualizing forces? Can we do both things at once? There's a lot of people who say, no, we can't. That's just life. Off they go. Let them have untrammeled access to, you know, hardcore pornography. Let them think that's what sexuality looks like. Let them have hookup culture when they go to college. You know, there's a lot of people who say, let them have all that. And I say, I don't think we have to be that extreme about it. I think we can protect them and nurture them and be more careful and thoughtful about them. And we can empower them to study and to play sports and to have a very engaged and vital and equal experience that boys have always been able to have.
Let's see what our listeners have to say. Caitlin Flanagan is with us. Her new book is Girl Land. Vika is calling from Lexington, Kentucky. Vika, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Well, I think that a dichotomy has been set up between sort of letting girls go out there on their own into this big, scary world that's going to sexualize them and, you know, keeping them back from all of that. Whereas I think that coming from my own experience, I immigrated here at the age of 11 from Armenia, and my mother has always been very encouraging of my independence as a woman. And by setting a strong example and by allowing me to explore this world on my own, I've moved around many different countries. I've traveled a lot. I've done a lot of research on women and coming from a developing nation myself, mm-hmm. where traditional cultures keep young women back from a lot of the things that men have the opportunities to do. And comparing that to my own experience and the example of my mother, I think that I have become a very strong, independent, and, you know, a much better person because I've had the freedom to explore and because I've had an example of a strong woman in my life always. And I think that had I been sheltered from that as a child, I'm saying a strong dichotomy has been set up between the two.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like my mother allowed me to watch porn when I was little, you know, but at the same time, I think that I had the same sort of freedom that she now gives my little brothers. And I think that that really helped me.
Vika, let me ask you, do you see a risk if we try to protect girls more of putting them back in the sort of traditional culture, even our own, where they had less freedom? Do you see a risk associated with that?
I do see a risk. I think that whatever you tell a girl from an early age, that whatever sphere that you put her in, however you socialize her, is the kinds of things that she will see herself capable of doing. I see a risk of young women growing up with the notion that somehow they're less than men or they are meant to do more domestic work. And I do see this as a sort of reverse to a conservative ideology.
Vika, I appreciate your call and that perspective, both valuing the freedom and kind of cautioning against cosseting girls so much that they don't have those opportunities. Let's get one more right here. Charlotte, North Carolina. Caroline, you're on the air.
Hi. One of the points that I wanted to make, I have a 15-year-old daughter, and I've found it impossible to actually shield her. I mean, regardless of what we do at home, she's exposed to all kind of things at school and on the Internet and whatnot, and you have to talk to them about it. You have to bring out what is positive that she can learn from it. You know, talking about, you know, the princess movies and the prince, I mean, the first thing I did was look at her and say, hon, you're going to have to find someone who treats you like a prince, a princess, and someone who is very respectful. And my grandmother's advice, be very particular about who you spend your time with. So every time you see one of those things, you have to take some of the positive out of it and have a talking opportunity with your daughter.
What about protection? Is it possible to create a more protective environment? Or they're just going to be exposed and you have to talk it through with them, Caroline?
Well, sure, you have to try to protect them, but they're going out to school and going into the world and they're making all kinds of friends. And so you have to equip them, you have to protect them, but you also have to equip them about the proper thought processes and actions to deal with it. One of the things I did with my daughter is give a code word. And whenever she got into a situation that she couldn't handle, she was to call me and tell me she had a stomach ache.
Yeah.
Which would make it very easy for her to get out of that situation and very easy for me to get her out of that situation without a big embarrassment.
Right.
So just taking little plans and little things every day to talk about. If I see someone dressed inappropriately, I will look over and say, look at that. That's very inappropriate. What do you think? And drag her into those kinds of conversations. The other night I called. When I go through the history on her computer and I'm telling her that I do that, you know, there are no secrets about that. I saw a site that I thought was very inappropriate, and we discussed, you know, real women don't look like that. Real situations don't happen like that.
Mm.
And when you see things like that, it goes into your mind, and you can't take it out.
Caroline, it sounds like you're really on the job. Let me take that, if I may, Vika and Caroline. Caitlin, this... These two paths, maybe, or perhaps they overlap, but equip versus protect. What's the ratio? What's the right ratio there?
Well, I think everything Caroline said was fantastic. And I had to smile because there was a moment when she said, when we see those princess movies, and I thought she was going to say, and I tell my daughter, that's not real. And then she said, tell my daughter, you've got to find your prince. And I smiled because I imagined every, you know, strong feminist hearing that kind of cringing, find your prince. We all know you're not supposed to find your prince. But I think there's a lot to that concept, that what are your standards going to be as a girl? What are you going to require of a boy? How do you want to be treated by him? How do you want to be spoken to by him? How does a boy have to treat you for him to get on your radar? You know, how hard does he... Here's the truth about adolescent boys and young men. They will do whatever it takes to get access to female companionship and ultimately to female sexuality. They will do whatever it takes. And if your standard is, you have to get to know me, you have to treat me well, you have to think of some invitations to things we could do together, movies I might like to see, a hike I might like to take, a concert I might like to go to, you need to study me the way you would study a sports figure to figure out what I like and what I'm into and what I'm all about. If those are your standards, he will meet those standards. But if your standards are no standard, you can text me, you can hook up with me, you can sext me, those are my standards, then that's what you'll end up with.
And Caitlin, what about our caller Vika's warning? There's some applause there, but also a warning of putting girls back into a kind of traditional cultural box or constraints, you know, motivated well, perhaps, but nevertheless, you know, they can end up back kind of in a box.
Well, I grew up in Berkeley in the 60s and the 70s, so I have seen with my own two eyes at the very youngest age that you can make a counterculture, that the options for you of how to live are not only the options that are already laid out for you in the mainstream American commercial culture. And I think we can build a new culture for girls. I think we can build an approach for girls where they have lots of strong women around them, where they have lots of opportunity and lots of ways to get that opportunity, and where they have a lot of protection and shelter and guidance in terms of their romantic life and their interaction with boys, so that they're getting something that's more worthwhile to them, which is more affection and more respect and more emotional commitment. I think we can make that culture. I'm not so cowed by the existing forms that I don't think we can do it.
Caitlin Flanagan is with us. Her new book is Girl Land. A lot of response to it, and a lot of it is pushed back hard. Emma Gilby Keller wrote in the New York Times, Girl Land described by Caitlin Flanagan as a dusty, empty place bearing little resemblance to your 21st century daughter's colorful, noisy, vibrant life. Joining us right now from New York is Irene Carmon. She's a staff writer at Salon, former reporter for the women's online magazine Jezebel. Irene, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
So you hear and you've read the case that Caitlin Flanagan is making. What's your reaction to it?
Well, I share Caitlin's concern about what the culture is teaching girls, but I have a few disagreements. One of them is that I think that we need to be talking more about how we're raising our boys and not have such a low opinion of them as to say that they are automatically going to be these brutes that are going to take advantage of girls, and that there's no way to intervene in the culture to raise boys with compassion and respect. And also that, you know, I'm 28. Mm-hmm. I'm young enough to have grown up with an internet connection in my bedroom.
Yep.
and old enough to be concerned about the messages that girls are exposed to. But I really agree with the callers. I think that there's a situation where there's only so much that you can protect girls, and you have to figure out how do you send them out into the world with values of strength and intelligence and ways to contend with all the negative messages that are out there. And part of that is, I agree, critiquing the culture, creating an alternate culture for girls, but also for boys.
We'll look at that. But what about the ratio? You hear Caitlin Flanagan saying, look, she wants strong, independent women, young women. But there needs to be a kind of zone of greater protection in these years of adolescence, what she calls girl land.
I'll be honest. I don't recognize the girl land that Caitlin describes. And I think part of it is when I wrote about the book at Salon, really, Caitlin seems to be describing her own childhood, which I think is very valid in as much as her own childhood goes and the things that she read. But if I were to think about my own adolescence, I would think about a very fertile time where I was really lucky to have a supportive community that allowed me to pursue intellectual and creative pursuits. And I didn't, you know, I had Instant Messenger, and it was okay. I was curious about sex, and it was okay. And I think that's a measure of good parenting and you know, being lucky to be in a safe community. And I think that those are the things we need to be focusing on, as opposed to pulling girls further into this imaginary room where Caitlin seems to imagine that they spend most of their time.
So do you see this as a kind of new, more informed concern about girls that's simultaneously maybe feminist but, you know, seasoned with some learning from our age? Or is this, old-fashioned paternalism in a new cover?
Look, I think feminists have been critiquing these corrosive aspects of culture. The last thing that that feminist mothers want to do is send their girls out to have oral sex with strangers per se. I think it's more about how do we create a dialogue around sexuality that is about information and not about shame. How do we say, instead of don't be like those girls, we say how do you create an authentic sexuality that is safe and knowledgeable and where you feel strong? And part of that has to do with bringing boys into the dialogue and not necessarily saying that girls are these fragile creatures.
Caitlin, does it have to be girl land as you've described it or maybe idealized it here? Does it have to be that really protected princessy realm? Are there many flavors of that chapter in a girl's life that can work?
Well, there are certainly many flavors. There are certain many ways to approach being a girl. What I'm always interested in is, in terms of boys, I'm the last person to demonize boys. I've got two boys at home. I think that, as I say, boys are perfectly willing to follow the cues that women give them about sexuality. If girls are comfortable with hookup culture, boys will be thrilled with hookup culture. No question about it. And they might not necessarily want to date that girl again. They might not necessarily want to have a relationship with her. They might not necessarily want to commit themselves to her. But it doesn't mean they're going to be brutish during that hookup or during that, you know, sexual encounter. But if girls want to have more committed relationships from boys, I think there are ways we can help them to do that. And I think as far as information, what I'm seeing are girls who have lots and lots and lots of information that comes to them about sexuality. I can show you lots of eighth grade girls who know how to roll on condoms because they've learned that in school. And I think that's all of that, you know, may be fine for some girls, and just send them out into this pornified culture with that information. Probably best that they have it.
I wish it were true that every eighth grade girl had access to all this information. I mean, I feel like you're conflating pornified culture and safe sex education, and that's a dichotomy that, I mean, that's a conflation that doesn't make any sense.
Arena, I was wondering, you're a good source for us as a young woman. Did you have a boyfriend in high school?
I dated some guys who probably weren't great guys. I was lucky that nothing really bad happened to me.
What could we as adults have done to you to help you with your dating relationship in high school?
We'll come back and look at that in the context of this whole question about girls' adolescence. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about American girls, adolescence, and a call to go back to a more protected, innocent girlhood. Caitlin Flanagan is with us. Her new book is Girl Land. Irene Carmon is with us, staff writer at Salon, former reporter at the women's online magazine Jezebel. Caitlin, Irin, lots of interesting response online. Jesse in Atlanta says, Tom, I believe we need to protect childhood for both boys and girls. Mary says, I would say not exactly protecting girlhood as much as rolling back the sexuality away, at least from the toddler in Tierra's age until they're maybe, oh, say, 15. And Christopher writes, aren't children already coddled enough? 800-423-8255 is our number. Caitlin, there's something I'd like to spell out here because I'm not sure it'll be entirely clear what you're getting at with your question to Erin for all of our listeners, but we'll come to it. But you write in the book a lot about how sort of boy-girl dating has given way to sort of group socializing. What's going on there, and what do you see as the significance and or the problem with that, Caitlin?
I think Erin gave us a beautiful example of it as a young woman, 28, and she described her experience growing up, that she had IM and internet connection, and she was curious about sex and looked up about it on the internet, and everything was fine. And then I said, well, what was your dating experience like in high school? Did you have a boyfriend? And she kind of, you know, gave us a moment, a very honest moment on air, and I appreciated it, where she said, well, she dated a few boys, and they didn't really treat her very well. And Erin's story is very, very typical of what a lot of young women will tell me, is they were very immersed in this culture. They were very empowered. They had a lot of people telling them about sexuality. But when they look back on their high school experience, they had a lot of experiences with boys where they really weren't treated very nicely. They weren't treated very well, and they don't look back on that time as a triumph or a success. And my book, Girlland, is asking the question, you know, what could we have done differently for Erin? What could we have done for her so that in addition to the IM and the internet and the sex ed classes, she also, not instead, she also had something that would help her to interact with boys where she could find a way that boys would treat her kindly. And I think that I think that mom from North Carolina was really on the ball, where she said, yeah, she talks through, she looks at the inappropriate sites, but she also looked at those princess movies. You know, it's like, I was like, oh, wow, that she's really going out there with this, but I liked what she had to say. And she says to her girl, how would you like a boy to treat you?
Erin, I don't want to presume too much about your high school romantic life, Erin,
right,
so please fill us in here, and what do you make of that?
We went to a commercial break before I really had a chance to articulate what I wanted to say. Mm-hmm. Caitlin, I so much appreciate your concern for me, but frankly, my adolescence was fine. And so were some of the, you know, growing up boys that I dated. In fact, what I wanted to say is that I think making mistakes is a big part of adolescence and how you figure out how to partner with people and how you learn. I feel really okay I don't think that this should be about me, nor should it be about you. This is really about what's going on in the American culture. But if you do want to make it about that, I feel fine about it because I was in a community of strong, supportive parents, a mother and a father. I was very lucky that I had a community that was behind me, and I don't need your concern. I was fine. What I want to be concerned about is how can we replicate that experience that I was privileged to have for girls? And I just don't think it's by pretending that they're going to be safe and protected if we lock them up in their rooms without an internet connection.
Well, where you and I differ, and I think it's fine to differ, but where we strongly differ is I don't want to replicate the experience you had. I don't want to say to a young woman, did you have a boyfriend in high school? And I don't want to get the answer back, well, I dated a few boys. They weren't very nice to me.
But is that what it's all about? Is that really the measure of a good adolescence if you had a good boyfriend in high school?
Well, I think that one thing we can do for girls, we're all wanting to do things for girls and to help girls. Girls are hugely interested in boys. You know, that's not ever going to change. If a girl is heterosexual, she's going to be hugely interested in boys. And you know, male sexual drives and male sexual interests in many ways are different from girls.
But do you think all girls in 1962 or 71 had good boyfriends in high school necessarily? What are you suggesting
I would. I mean, based on Caitlin's book, she had some pretty traumatizing experiences too, for which I'm very sorry also. I mean, I think it's always been a reality that humans will hurt each other.
Caitlin, are you suggesting
to make people resilient in the face of humans hurting each other? That's really the question.
Are you suggesting, Caitlin, that it's really worse now?
I talk in the book about, you know, on the one hand, we don't have dating. There were a lot of perils to dating. And I spoke in the book about I was very nearly what we, you know, classically was called date rape, We didn't even know such a thing existed then. So there were great perils in this idea that in a more patriarchal system, you as a young girl were going to go out with a boy whom you didn't maybe know very well. It's kind of a crazy system when you think of it. And date rape and the awareness of date rape was a profound, revolutionary, changing event in the life of women who went to college in my age in the 80s. It really changed and protected us. And I think that we can continue to move forward, to look at current culture. Talking about date rape's almost useless now because kids don't go on conventional dates. So I think sort of trying to keep our eye on what's going on in this moment, in this culture, and how can we simultaneously, as a teacher of girls for many years, how can we simultaneously empower and strengthen and yet look at that part of their life which is romantic, which is interested in boys, and say, for a girl, her desires and wishes in that context, we can help them with. We can give them as much advice about that as that mom from North Carolina was saying. We can give them as much advice about that as we do about being strong and being powerful.
Irene, let me get me
Tom, your response there.
Yes.
Yes, Tom, I liked your question about what's the measure of a successful adolescence, because as interested as girls are in romance or adolescence and how whatever interest boys have, and I believe it's substantial, I think the measure of a healthy adolescence is that I, you know, if we're still using my life for some reason as an example, that I emerged feeling happy and connected and with healthy relationships, got into the college of my choice, am lucky to have a career that I am happy about where I get to debate Caitlin Flanagan about female sexuality. And I think that there's a point here at which we are assuming that it's that there's this. I want to go back to what Caitlin said about the word date rape not being relevant anymore. I agree that the term date rape is not appropriate.
Why?
Because it makes it sound like this is a milder form of rape, whereas in reality, what we should be talking about is sexual violence and how do we talk about consent? How do we talk about boundaries? That I really feel like is the conversation that we should be having here.
May I just ask you, are you saying then, I mean, you get the picture of this kind of general problem that Caitlin describes here of girls being in sort of too brutish, too rugged, too fast a world in those years. Are you saying that there's no problem or not?
I'm absolutely not saying that there's a problem. I'm saying that there's a culture that we should, and in fact, it's my job to actively critique and push back on. There's a political assault on women's rights in this country. There is a cultural assault that is a backlash to women's progress. And I think that we should be readily engaged in that culture. In fact, I wished that I had seen more contemporary cultural critique in Caitlin's book, which seemed mostly focused on the books that she had read growing up. I think there's plenty of things that we should be critiquing. I just think that they should be from the vantage point of how do we send girls and boys out into the world without a lot of these corrosive messages, or at least with a resilience so that they can respond to them in a way that hopefully engenders more healthy adults.
Let's hear from our listeners. Hartford, Connecticut. Eileen is on the line. Hi, Eileen, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom.
Hi.
Caitlin, I wanted to thank you for your work. And I would concur with you that I think that there should be a sacred place for girls to be themselves and to get away from the pressures that they deal with as teens. I wanted to simplify the argument a little bit. I have two sons and a daughter, and I have raised them basically the same. And I make my decisions often based on the way my mother raised me. And I think that our society too often acquiesces to the lowest common denominator. And I think that parents who say, everyone is doing it, I should allow my child to as well, is very, very misguided. For example, Facebook is forbidden in my house.
Good.
My kids, they're three teenagers, actually. The center of their life is the family.
Good.
They are not coddled, as one of your writers indicated, but you know, we have standards and expectations of them, and they are held accountable for what they do in school, in extracurricular activities, and so on. But to comment about how to raise a daughter in this day and age, I have my daughter look at her father because he is, I think, the ultimate role model for her to, you know, determine what kind of a man would I want to be involved with. I've said to her many times, just look at your dad. See the way he treats me. I think that if you're in a marriage and you're raising children, that is the model that they will follow. and the discussion should include dads.
And does very much in Caitlin's book, Eileen. I appreciate your call.
Caitlin, can I take one moment, Tom? You know, sometimes there's a feeling that that there aren't families who want to protect daughters from this corrosive culture. And I want to take a moment for any parent who agrees with Eileen that there are millions of us who feel this way.
I don't think it's an us-them thing. I think there are very few families who just don't give a hoot what kind of popular cultural influences their children are up against. That seems odd.
Well, if we listen to Irene, she's saying she had the internet and she was curious about sex and learned a lot about it from there, and her parents were comfortable with it.
I think that's exaggeration of what she said. She said she had a very strong, supportive family. My point is just that I think most Americans are alert to the dangers of just throwing your kid out into the popular culture and thinking that that's some kind of wholesome, nurturing, necessarily, environment. That seems to be a pretty common understanding.
You know what? If you were to ask among your friends who have adolescents how many of them have internet connection in their bedroom that they have unfettered and untrammeled access to, a huge number will say they do. And so you're seeing parents who may say they're concerned, but what are they willing to do? It's hard work. Parenting a teenager, you know, we get through the toddler years and we think, oh, we finally get a break, and elementary school is really a cakewalk in so many ways. And then we get to adolescence, and by then we're kind of tired out. But now we need to be as vigilant and as hardworking as we were when they were toddlers, because suddenly the whole world, you know, to borrow in a phrase, the dialectic may not, you know, you may not be interested in the dialectic, but the dialectic is interested in you.
Absolutely.
The culture is interested in your daughter. And I think what Eileen said finally, that's very much in my book about fathers and their role, one of the central questions of any young girl's life is, am I lovable and am I capable of loving an adult? Am I capable of loving and being loved by an adult man? And if dad's at home, that question is worked out. And if dad's not, she will always work that out romantically. And so for families that don't have a father at home, they want to really think about that. That's an important protective element
That's an awful big slice of our society. And even those don't necessarily have, lucky for Eileen and wonderful for her and her family, but it's not always that ideal father figure there.
Well, let's not call it lucky. Let's remember that to make a marriage and to make a marriage work, she's done a lot. She didn't just win some lottery. She didn't pick some four-leaf clover, and she has a loving husband. There's obviously always an element of chance. Some guy can turn out to be a jerk or an abandoner. But she decided to commit her life. I'm sure if she were on the phone, she would adamantly agree. She decided that a central value in her life was protecting a good, safe, and nurturing home for her children and building a marriage from which that could proceed. So I just don't want to say that was luck.
I'm saying it's like, lucky for her that she has such a person. It's good fortune.
Right. I feel lucky that I also had a strong father and I had three brothers. But I also think that it seems so much like, in throughout this conversation, Caitlin, you've really been setting up, even when you were talking about female sexual choices, kind of recycling a lot of these nostalgic ideas about family, many of which were very negative for women, and finding sort of an old-fashioned value in them as if they didn't go away for very good reason. I mean, growing up in a two-parent household was great for me, but if one of my parents had happened to be abusive, if one of my parents were incarcerated, that certainly wouldn't be my mother or my father's fault. That would be a reality that we would figure out, you know, what are we going to do now? Because that's a reality that's in a lot of people's lives. I just think that when you're setting up a value, sort of, what do nice girls do? Nice girls get a good guy to marry them. Nice girls get that guy to stay around and be a good father. I'm sure a lot of people hope that that's how it turns out, but we're really dealing with what's the reality of our culture right now. And as if a strong woman or a strong role model isn't going to be enough, well, then you've given up before you even started.
Are you putting a whole bunch of Americans on the outside looking in here, Caitlin? I mean, what if they don't have that sort of what you describe as an ideal setup available to them? And what about its pitfalls? You know, we know if you go back half a century, it was not all perfection.
A strong marriage is that we've really gotten this magical thinking about marriage that that you have to hope for it, you have to luck out if you get it. There was no decisions you could have made. There were no carefully planned things you could have done to learn about marriage. you know, a lot of times women will marry a real cat or a jerk, and a lot of people will say, boy, there were 5 warning signs that that guy was going to be an abandoning jerk. Why didn't you take them? Well, I believed and I had hope. I had, you know, I just thought it would all work out. I think that we can look at marriage and talk about marriage. Great thing to talk to young people about is, you know, how do you find a mate? What do you talk about? What kind of counseling, maybe going to a religious person, you know, your clergy member, what can that person tell you about marriage? I think that the idea that it's just a crapshoot is very self-defeating. I think that there are all people across this country who work on marriages and who work on relationships and who find wise counsel.
I don't know who's describing it as a crapshoot, but nevertheless, a lot of people, children foremost, find themselves in situations that are not traditional and that are not ideal. And yet, they have to rise up. They have to learn how to flourish. They have to find their way, even without the nice girl land retreat in a cozy bedroom, don't they?
Well, when you talk about, you know, dads being absent, in my opinion, it's a huge, I call it a crisis. Some people think it's a wonderful new way of life. But I think if you don't, and, you know, both of my parents were raised fatherless, it's a hardship to be raised without a father. And so one of the things I talk about in the book is an awareness, not that it's a great alternate lifestyle, but it's a hardship. What are we going to do? Who's the uncle? Who's the great close adult male friend? Who can we bring in to this girl's life or this boy's life that can fulfill some of that role for her?
Well, we're not going to settle this one today, but Flair's going up there from Caitlin Flanagan's corner on the adolescent life of girls and some issues that may need tending there. Flair's coming back the other way saying, wait, let's not throw baby out with bathwater as we provide that care. Caitlin Flanagan, author of Girl Land, joining us today from Culver City, California. It's great to have you. Thank you very much for your insights.
Thank you.
And Erin Carmon at Salon, a former reporter for Jezebel, joining us from New York. Erin, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. You can continue the conversation, get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @OnPointRadio. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.